we go. Bucky's. Bucky's Auto Service Centers with 16 locations. Been around 48. They do good things for your car. They're great people. You can trust them. Nothing makes you feel worse. You can't tell what's wrong with your car. You take it in there and the mechanic looks at you like, oh, my gosh, am I getting ripped off? Am I going to have to call Jesse? Jesse Jones! No! Not when you go to Bucky's. Bucky's Auto Service Centers. What's wrong, Jacob? You all right over there? You okay?
Yes, I was laughing.
Okay.
We didn't know which Jesse you were referring to.
Jesse Jones. Diamond. I remember when Jesse Jones got hired from Baltimore, and I saw him
in
the
hallway. You were a king?
I was a king.
Yeah.
And he had brought in, and I remember him, I watched him sign off. The East Coast television market, it's a sign-off. Sign-off is where, you know, reporting live from Harrisburg, I'm Sandy Starobin. Sandy Starobin, NBC News, Washington. Remember the sign-off?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that was your tag.
Right.
The tag was really big. They didn't do any of that stuff out here in the West Coast. And when they brought him in from Baltimore, I said, oh, there's an East Coast guy. I saw him in the hallway. I said, hey, you got to be an East Coast guy with that sign-off. He goes, oh, man, you ain't seen nothing yet. And he got it got bigger and bigger and bigger. And that's really the thing that made Jesse Jesse Jones, King 5 News. Like, whoa.
And now it was so successful, he's now at Cairo.
Right, right. Well, King didn't want to keep him around. Cairo offered more money. That's the way you got to do what you do. Now, video release, a Seattle police sergeant who sat in a chair in front of a man's workplace seeking an apology. Wow, this looks bad. For this one guy. This is not endemic of the entire, you know, police, Seattle Police Department.
Because you do have a blue light in your heart.
I do.
You got an extra.
I found an extra one.
Yeah, exactly.
Near my desk. So here we go. This guy goes, the cop goes over, he's a sergeant, he goes over on a call. We can't determine what's wrong with the car, but the car's going to be towed away.
Yeah, that's right. We think it had expired tags.
Okay. So he says to the woman, she goes, well, hold on, stuff out of your car. She gets it out of the car, and then the boyfriend or whatever that guy's relationship to the woman is, they come over, start talking smack to the guy, says a few nasty things to the cop. Cop gets in his car, and then what happens, Tom?
Well, they yell out a few things to him as the car is being towed away. Yes. You know, derogatory things, we'll just say. And he says, yeah, 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 that's fine. You know, I'll see you later.
Right.
And a few hours later, he returns to this guy's place of employment, which was an AutoZone, with a chair.
Yeah.
And he has something to drink, and he decides to sit down. And
he's on duty.
He is on duty, in uniform, wearing his camera, as he should be, and he is doing, as a number of people ask him, hey, why are you here? He says, I'm just doing community police work here. Just
there
community
go.
Policing.
I got my comfy chair.
Is that where you're posing at now?
For now. I got a little disrespected earlier today, so I'm going to hang out. Hey, I'm just cold kicking it. Yeah. No, just doing some community-oriented policing stuff. So I'm gonna be here pretty often until I get an apology, I think. This is one of the guys that's usually out here.
Oh boy. Tom actually sat and watched all 20-some minutes, right?
Yeah, it's a 40 minutes, but it was
convenient. Would you recommend it? How many tangs would you give it?
I'd give it two. For the time, I want to be clear. I put it on. My computer's in my dining room, and I got up, you know, went to the kitchen, called them back, but I just let it run. Because once you get the establishing shot, it doesn't change a lot.
Oh, okay.
You just hear.
What do you think? It's like an Andy Warhol movie. Were you cold kicking it at any time?
Yeah, you bet.
Hey, I heard the story of why you're out here, and I just want to let you know that I think it's a mask that we're doing. It's the one in
Okay.
All right,
cool. Thank you.
Can I get the badge number?
Sure. 6613. Just so you know, you are being recorded when you're near me. That's okay, great. My body cam's on.
Yes, 6613. I just think it's bad representation what you're doing.
Hanging out with the public?
No, man. They know why you're here.
I'm just hanging out.
Customers inside the store.
Okay.
They're fully aware of why you're here.
Go ahead.
This is really bad form, man. Bad relation.
Okay. The guy is, this guy actually convinced him to stop. Okay, here we go.
And you, because I heard you say you felt like he was disrespected.
Oh, I was.
Yeah, but see, the thing is, if you approach him now while the thing is kind of heightened, because he's upset with you and then you felt you was disrespected.
Oh, voice of reason.
Yeah,
who played
true.
This guy?
he's
the guy from the Green Mile. Here we go.
The thing is that you know he's going to be combatant and he's going to get loud with you.
Wow, this guy. Hopefully, this guy's a father.
And because you're, you know, you're undoing.
No,
and
I
stuff
absolutely
like
see
that,
your point.
He's going to get mad, and you're going to get mad, and you're going to say, "Hey, you need to calm down."
Well, I would like to have that a side conversation with him.
Well, see, the thing is, you might want to wait till things de-escalate.
That's a good point.
Really, because see, right now you're on your.
I'm okay. My feelings are hurt.
You're okay. So when we're in our feelings.
Wow.
Our feelings turn into emotions.
When uncontrolled.
And when uncontrolled, emotions turns into aggression. So if he starts going at you the wrong way, it's going to turn more into feeling. The feeling's going to come out, and then it's going to be a whole different thing. So in a case like that, I would like to say, man, I'm going to let this ride.
Maybe
for
a little
while.
Let it settle a little
let
bit.
Let it settle, man.
I appreciate it. That is great insight,
man,
sir. I appreciate
you,
that's well thought out.
Around the horn, what does that guy do for a living? Tom.
I have no idea, but he does sound like he could be a counselor.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I think social worker.
Yeah, social worker.
What do you think, Andrew?
I think he's a therapist.
A therapist, okay. Therapist.
I actually know the answer. Do you want to guess?
Yeah, what is it?
Later in the video, he says he works for the city.
Okay.
Something to do with water, so I don't know if that's...
Ah!
Oh, yeah, in the water department
or
something.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Oh, crap. Well, whatever that guy's got going on, that's a perfect example. Because what he did was... He allowed the cop, he recognized the cop's feelings by saying,
that's right.
You got your feelings hurt. Yeah. I understand that. So he recognizes, so it's the feel, felt, found. I know how you feel.
Yeah.
Here's what I have found, right? Feel, felt. Others have felt the same way. And here's what we found. If you'd go after the guy now, you're not going to get an apology. Things are only going to get worse. And then the guy realizes, hey, you're right, but at least somebody addressed the fact that my feelings were hurt.
That's right. However, I think... That guy, the cop, who says my feelings were hurt, I don't think his feelings were really hurt. I think he's using that language as a throwback because he's like, he probably despises people that use feelings talk. And so I thought he was being kind of funny when he was saying it, like, oh, my feelings are hurt, so I'm now justified. You know how conservatives complain about college students being snowflakes?
Mm-hmm.
And I think he was, and the thing is, the great thing is, this guy then took him at his word. Okay, well, I understand your feelings are hurt. And he ends up realizing, hey, you speak a lot of reason, sir.
That's good.
So what happens to the cop now? Did he lose his job?
Well, no, he didn't lose his job. There is a continuing investigation on whether he lied or not about what he was doing in an initial investigation. By the way, the police guild, which always, you know, tends to come to the defense of their members, thought this whole thing was minor and objected to even the investigation itself, thought it was minor misconduct and shouldn't be given this much attention. But Carmen Best has decided to knock him down a rank, so now he's just a regular officer instead of a sergeant, and she suspended him, I think, without pay for 10 days.
Okay. If he had gotten a call, having ridden with Dave, if he gets a call... You know, all units respond or whoever's closest to it, he would then have to go to it. He's sitting there. Maybe he wasn't getting any calls, whether he's hanging out there in the parking lot or hanging out over near Starbucks or hanging out just driving down the street or hanging out sudden have a call. Did he did not respond to a call?
Negligence of duty was not what he was.
No. There you go.
No, what I think he's in trouble for is...
The intimidation.
Hanging out in front of an AutoZone place for an employee who apparently that is like, that's, you know, taking your authority too far, like sort of overstepping the
I'm surprised that a Seattle police officer could be offended by somebody saying those types of words to him.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. That's what my feelings.
I mean, you have Shama Sawant referring to them as murderers.
That's right.
Right. So I mean, come on now. So there's
do you believe him when he says my feelings were hurt?
Yes.
Clearly, I think he was irritated and pissed off because he's going, I'm going to show this guy.
Yeah.
It's kind of a power move on his part, and it backfired on him.
What, the guy's going to come out and apologize?
Yes,
come on.
Yeah, I'm here till, and then he left.
Sorry, officer, I called you those things. You know what? Okay, I accept your apology. Let's hug it out, bro. Come on. Impeaching Donald Trump, The Atlantic has a gigantic piece on this. It's time for the blistering cover story. Of course, it was Nancy Pelosi that said a couple days ago, oh, we're not talking about impeachment. That's not part of it. And then it was some recently elected congresswoman, I forget her name, saying we're going to impeach that video. That she's the real deal. That's what they really want to do.
Well, now somebody else has been addressing her, claiming that they are afraid that she could this is a Republican representative saying that she might blow up the White House or Congress or something. So now she is on the receiving end, and there's a lot of uproar about that response. So it gives you the a good indication of the kind of tempers that that are on display in Washington D.C. This Atlantic,
I got tons of sound
article. Oh, you do? Okay, let's just go for
Here's a senior editor saying he didn't set out to write an essay advocating for the impeachment of Trump.
This wasn't the argument that I set out to make. Before I came to the
Atlantic. Oh, no. Is there, like, cute little music underneath this? Sorry, everybody.
Atlantic, her taught history. And so when I wanted to understand this moment, I looked at the past political crises. Three times before, Congress has moved to impeach a president. With Bill Clinton, Richard Nixon, and Andrew Johnson. As I delved in, I realized that pundits have overlearned the lessons of Bill Clinton's impeachment, which backfired on his accusers, and entirely forgotten the real significance of Andrew Johnson's.
When they established the impeachment part of the Constitution, they said crimes and misdemeanors. Because, I know,
high crimes and misdemeanors, like the high and the low.
Right. They said they so much want this thing to be available that they, because they, you know, certainly with the king, high crimes or, and then the other thing is, rules of impeachment, basically the House can come up with anything that they want. So this seems like an impeachable offense. But remember, you can get them impeached in the House, and then it goes to the Senate, where the Senate becomes the trial. That's where the trial is. Now, you got to get a two-thirds majority in the Senate, which they obviously don't have the numbers on, but it's going to be irritating for the president to have to be impeached in the House and explain all that sort of stuff. He won't leave. I think Nixon knew. Nixon resigned in August, right?
He
knew that when it went to the Senate, he would have lost in the Senate.
That's right. Even though the Republicans, I think, had the majority in the Senate, if they didn't, they had enough to block it, but there were enough Republican senators that switched sides that they went to him, the majority leader went to him and said, hey, listen, you're going to lose this vote. Better resign.
And Nixon, on his resignation speech, did say, I don't want to put the country through this.
Yes.
So, yeah, there you go. All right, more from the editor of Atlanta.
Atlantic.
This is talking about when they impeached Andrew Johnson. By the way, this will all be on the test tomorrow.
Johnson came to the presidency in 1865, just after the Civil War, when Abraham Lincoln was assassinated. At the time, the Atlanta called him an autocrat, egotistic to the point of mental disease, who had become the prey of intriguers and sycophants.
Okay, I don't care about that. I care about the fact there's five reasons for impeachment is a good thing, even though it didn't work out. Here we go. This is for Clinton.
It shifted the public's attention away from the president's provocations and toward his debilities. Second, it preoccupied the president and his senior staff, diverting them away from their attacks on constitutional liberties. Third, it separated the wild and baseless charges against him from those that were backed by evidence. Fourth, it moved the fight to a rule-bound forum, diffusing the potential for violence. And fifth, despite his acquittal, it did lasting damage to his political prospects, preventing his re-election as president.
He's talking about Andrew Johnson.
Jack Johnson on that one. Because Clinton did okay. Finally, it says impeachment makes sense now, too, when it comes to Trump.
Impeachment is a potent tool. It shouldn't be abused or used to settle disputes about policy. That's what elections are for. But the most serious charges against Johnson and those facing Donald Trump aren't merely political disputes. Many Americans, then and now, believe that their president had taken aim against basic constitutional liberties, shown himself unfit for the office that he holds, and proven unable to discharge his basic duties.
Okay. So they can make up whatever they want in the House, throw it in. It doesn't get it. The Senate won't vote to impeach the president. But again, it just makes it sort of brings everything to a standstill for a little while.
Yeah. And it could. I mean, the Senate could, just because of their majority Republicans, it doesn't mean that if there was like real damning evidence, which is what ended up dooming Nixon, he resisted until the smoking gun of the tapes comes out. If there's something in the Mueller investigation, Republicans also could move on this score. But yes, I think the headline is a little misleading. Atlantic comes out with this blistering call for impeachment. But as they say, they point out, impeachment is a process, not an outcome.
Right.
They say, this needs to be investigated, in the public arena. And that's why they're calling for it. But again, I don't think most mainstream Democrats want impeachment.
Nope.
That seems like it's a bridge too far. We don't need that. We're better off maybe with the investigation and upcoming elections overturning things.
It certainly didn't help the Republicans when they went after Bill Clinton. If anything, it made him even more popular.
It made him more popular. However, Gore still lost the election. Gore was like, it would have been the third term for Bill Clinton, and so you don't know how that played positively or negatively.
Yeah, but who wanted to vote for Gore?
Well, it was a damn close election, John. It was closer than Trump's victory over Hillary. I'll give you that.
Rudy Giuliani is often the harbinger of things to come. He doesn't mean to be, but what happens is he says something over and over and over again, and then he disappears from cable news for a little while and then comes back on and says something that's contrary to what he had said before. Yeah. Now, here's what people want to know. Does Rudy, America's mayor, has he seen something or heard something that's coming out of the Mueller investigation that has indicated to him that there may be collusion? Because if you'd watch Rudy for the last, what, a year, year and a half, there's no collusion.
No collusion.
And then he ends up saying this.
Mr. Mayor, false reporting is saying...
This is a Cuomo from CNN.
...that nobody in the campaign had any contacts with Russia. False reporting is saying that there has been no suggestion of any kind of collusion between the campaign and any Russians. Because now you have Paul Manafort giving poll data
that winds up
leading to this coincidence.
Well, you just misstated my position. I never said there was no collusion between the campaign or between people in the campaign.
Yes,
I have no idea. I said the President of the United States. There is not a single bit of evidence. The President of the United States committed the only crime you could commit here, conspired with the Russians to hack the DNC.
Okay, so he's
first off, that's splitting the difference. That's dead wrong.
No,
there are a number of instances. I mean, if you want, we can just assume that what I'm telling you is the truth.
I know it is.
There was no collusion with the Russians whatsoever on behalf of the Trump campaign. Correct, Julie responded at the time. They got all these instances and all the tweets that President Trump's come out. There's been no, this idea, it's a complete hoax, a witch hunt. There's no collusion between my campaign and, well, all of a sudden, not only has he, as I heard this federal prosecutor say last night, not only did Giuliani just move the goalposts, he also narrowed them. That they're saying, well, now I'm only saying that Trump, maybe there was collusion with his campaign, but I didn't know about it and he didn't know about it. And so therefore, there's no collusion with the president, but maybe not his campaign.
Right. Is collusion a crime?
As Giuliani famously said, collusion is not a crime because collusion is not what you're accused of. It's the man in the streets word for conspiracy to work together with a foreign power.
Mm-hmm.
The key here, though, also is that he's the only thing he can be accused of is hacking. If he hacked the computer himself, and they said, well, no, that's not true either. I mean, he's up for all sorts of possibilities. But anyway, Giuliani, we're wondering if Giuliani now knows something about, oh, cripes, somebody in the campaign did collude, and now I've just got to protect. I mean, the next thing was suggested, he's going to say, well, I didn't say his family didn't collude. I just said the president didn't collude, so maybe he'd throw even Ivanka and Jared under the bus. Who knows what this means? It might just be Rudy being Rudy.
Yeah.
But again, people are searching the tea leaves.
It takes less hours to run after somebody and shoot them with a gun, as far as training is concerned, than digging fungus out of a cuticle in the state of Washington.
That's true.
We'll be right back. The online training academy text line 98973. Great way to get in touch with you. All these other shows at Cairo will say, oh, we'd love to get your letters. Nobody does more to really honor the thoughts, the questions, the comments, the concerns, and the feelings of the listener like we do here at the Tom McCurley Show. We give you a whole 8 minutes. We try to get through as many letters as possible. Tom and I are really good about not commenting on the letters. And we even have a thing called Letter of the Day, brought to you by a teeny tiny lady in a pickle jar.
And no show has listeners that honor than us more than our writers. I mean, they're brilliant.
I have to say, real quick before we do this story on bounty hunters, you have to understand something. So at 11:42, we go into that commercial break just before our last one. Jacob grabs the letters from the mailman that come, and he hands them to us. Tom and I sit here. Jacob laughs, and we are laughing at the stuff that you write. And I say, Tom, we got to get through all of these letters.
Yeah, we've got to.
So I just want to let you know, you guys are far smarter and funnier than we are. But, of course, you guys have at least 3 hours to come up with
it.
We got to pull this crap out every 5 seconds. All right, here we go. The bounty hunter. There's a couple things you need to understand about bounty hunters. One is that when you sign... put your bail up. When you sign the fact that you're going to be, allowing yourself to have your money put towards bail contract, you also sign something that says you give away all your constitutional rights. So you don't have to, a bounty hunter doesn't have to read you the Miranda. A bounty hunter doesn't have to identify himself. A bounty hunter doesn't need to get a warrant to come into your house.
He can break the door down and take you across state lines without
extradition. Well, you agreed. But you agreed. You said, okay, I'll put my bail up, and I realize if I bust bail, I give up my constitutional rights.
Yes, but it's not the government that's doing this. This is the company. So if you give, let's say you give $1,000 to this guy for bail, you're a bail bondsman.
Yeah.
And then they stiff you, then you have the right as the bail bondsman to hire bounty hunters to go after these guys. And, you know, practically anything is allowed. And Seattle Times has this really long, in-depth article. It's a great profile. I'd recommend it to just about anybody that talks about, because we have such lax rules, you can do just about anything. And people that apply, you have to apply to be a bounty hunter.
Mm-hmm.
But out of like the 400 applications, they've only rejected like two.
Uh-huh.
So they say almost half of the bounty hunters themselves have criminal records.
That's okay. I
mean, they're already, yeah, maybe. But the problem is it can easily get out of hand, and they start with a profile. Do we have Seth?
Yeah, we got
this
guy.
Okay, great.
He tells the story of being confronted by a bounty hunter after his after her son. This is it. What happened to the son?
No sooner did I get it in park, and this car comes out of nowhere, and the windows come down, and the shotguns come out. And it was just that quick. He never said anything, never said, you know, bail bonds company. He just started shooting me. I thought we were being robbed. I've seen these guys one time. That's it. I didn't recognize them. No, until he had my son on the ground with the gun to the back of his head and his foot on his head. Mm-hmm. That's when I realized who he was. One lodged in my nose. So the doctor said it, if it had gone through my eye and hit my brain, it would have killed me.
Okay, there's the body cam video of the confrontation. Want to hear some of this?
Yes.
17 seconds. Here we go.
Stop it. Shut that vehicle off there. On the ground. Over here. Over here. Over here. Matt, right here. Right here. Flat on the ground. Flat on your belly. What the f***? What the f*** are you doing trying to run us over?
Oh,
okay. First off, they weren't. I mean, this has already been adjudicated, and they said that they think that's baloney. That was the line he was using. But he said we didn't get all the. He shot with unannounced. Didn't say who he was. He just shot at her car. This is the mom. She's driving her 30-year-old son. So it's not like he's a 12-year-old. 30-year-old son's in the back seat. She's driving, and they come up, stop her, and shoot right through the windshield, saying turn off the car. Then they shoot through the side. Passenger side window, and that's when she gets all this, you know, this glass in her nose, and her nose starts bleeding. She doesn't know who they are. They were after the son in the back because of all this. Go ahead. Is this the
last part? Okay. She says it sounds traumatized. Here we go.
I don't like thinking about the man. I feel like he's got control of my life, and I don't like that. It's like I don't like to go out. When it first happened, it was like, I mean, every time I seen somebody, I seen him. It's like his face was everywhere. I don't really see him, but I mean, if I feel like I see him. You know, it's like I'm afraid. I lock my doors. I've got a chair in front of my front door. I mean, I've got it like jammed, you know, because he knows where I live. You know, the guy scares me.
Well, he's not going to come after her. He came after the kid because that's the bounty. He wanted to get the kid back.
That's right. But
what did the kid do, by the way? 30-year-old.
He just reneged on bail. He, you know, he
what was his crime?
Bail.
You know what that is? No,
I don't have it in front of me. But the point here is that he ended up. They took him to. They charged him with third-degree felony assault, and the settlement was that he would give up his bounty hunter's license for 10 years. So he did acknowledge that they. In effect, it convicted him of, you know, doing something improper. But this guy, his name is Scott Gribble, is now in training the next generation of bounty hunters. He's formed his own. It's like the number one bounty hunter training group in the state. And there are concerns because I think he might have a criminal record. And the way he goes about business makes some people concerned. And maybe we ought to crack down even harder on the bounty hunting industry.
Is the dog, the bounty hunter, still on television?
I don't think so.
No,
I don't
know. ENA with his wife, and he's got that crazy haircut and that weird tan.
But there are a number of examples. In 2016, a bounty hunter shot and killed a fugitive's mother in a botched apprehension attempt. I mean, there are a number of instances where things really go awry because they have basic carte blanche. And the problem is that we, in 2004, the Washington State passed some relatively, you know, strict bounty hunter laws, but the Supreme Court in 1890s ruled that they have this, you know, they have the freedom to do all this. They've given permission. Unless you overturn a Supreme Court ruling, it's going to be tough to get too much more restrictions. But even this guy, this Gribble guy, says he does think that it's ridiculous how little training people have to get. Obviously, now he's training people, so he'd like to have more required by,
sure.
By law. But he points out that you only have to have 32 hours of training. There's no formalized curriculum. There's no formalized certification format that they have to acknowledge. And he says 32 hours of supervised training versus 1,600 hours of supervised training for cosmetic and hairdressers
right.
in this state. It seems a little out of whack.
Well, they do. The industry does that. They put those barriers in place so that you don't have more people coming in. It helps reduce the supply side, which allows the prices to remain high. So they go down.
Oh, so you don't think that we need that?
We need 1,600 hours plus $3,000 or $7,000 worth of training. So you have somebody who has limited skills but wants to be a, say, work in a nail salon.
Don't say limited skills.
No, limited skills.
Unlimited skills. It doesn't matter.
Hold on. I mean, she doesn't have a whole bunch of options to her. Okay. Let's say that she's Asian and English is her second language.
Okay.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm painting a picture that is called reality. That most nail salons,
I agree.
They're Asian.
I know.
And you know why?
Do I know why what?
Why most Asians are involved in nail salons?
Because they have limited skills is what I'm afraid you're suggesting, and that's why I want to stop.
Here it is. And give me 1 minute. This is a fascinating story.
Okay,
Tippi Hedren, who was in the movie
Birds. Hang on.
Yeah.
Ready and go.
Tippi Hedren, who was in the movie Birds, became famous for that. She visited a refugee camp in L.A., and she was walking through the camp, and most of them were Vietnamese boat people. She had beautiful fingernails. They had never seen anything like this before, and they said, how do you do that? She goes, oh, I'll show you how I paint my fingers. So she would come back week after week and show them how to do nails. And then eventually, when they left, that's the genesis of nail salons being mostly Asian. It's Tippi Hedren. Okay.
Really?
Yes.
You know who her daughter is?
Tom, I'm not talking about
Melanie
I'm talking
Griffin.
Nails. Okay. How much time do I have left?
30.
Okay. So what the state does is you get organizations come in and lobby so the states keep the barriers high to stop somebody who doesn't have a lot of other options from becoming a nail salon person. So you charge them $3,000 or $7,000 or $10,000 for a license to keep them out. That's why those things are in place. It's to reduce the supply to keep the prices high. That's why the state does that.
Okay, I mean, that's an interesting libertarian take on requirements that are meant to protect people's safety.
But right from what? How many people are dying from nail fungus, Tom?
Okay. I have no idea, John. No, none, because we require 1,600 hours.
Right,
and yet
bounty
hunter can shoot you through your windshield without even notifying you and take your son across state lines. It's outrageous. Hey, we both got soapboxes, dang you.
You always. Yeah, you always say, I'm on a soapbox.
Yeah.
I'm a soapbox, too.
Only
people
in reference
listen
to
the show on a podcast, you talk far more than I do.
I doubt that, but I'm going to tower over you now and stand.
Security!
I don't need a soapbox.
We'll be right back. Muckleshoot Bingo. He's going to bring you the know-it-all quiz tomorrow. We thank Muckleshoot for doing that. That's where we ask you 5 questions, stories we covered all week. Didn't the listener tell us what suggestion there was?
They wanted us to some questions about Sully's traffic updates every day.
So the 5 questions would be about...
I feel like that would be pretty hard to generate 5 different questions.
Didn't say they had to be good.
That's fair enough.
What didn't happen on Monday? What didn't happen on Tuesday? What didn't happen on Friday?
Remember, that was a suggestion from the listener. babies born in Nordic countries are crying for kids. In fact, how old is this story? Oh, this is May 2017. A council person in Sweden suggested that every single employee gets an opportunity to go home for an hour once a week to have sex. It would be great, wouldn't it, to go home during the day and have an extra hour of sex when the kids aren't home? People today have such busy lives, and sex is in short supply for many, said the council member. Another reason would be an hour paid for sex was a good idea because of the aging population and you need new babies. So the government would send you home and pay you to get it on.
Now, do they check to see if you're on the pill, if you're using kind of impediment to fertility? Because
it got voted down.
Scandinavians.
Prudes.
So this is, I mean, this is the new story is about babies wanted Nordic countries crying for kids. One of the great things about the Nordic countries, and we're talking about Norway and Sweden and Finland and Denmark.
Netherlands.
Netherlands doesn't quite fit the bill. They're part of the mainland of Europe. However,
yes,
they may have a falling birth rate, but the key, especially for Scandinavia, is they're famously socialist countries or social welfare countries, and so they are, their entire way of living is based on having a younger generations. Mm-hmm. And if you get to a tippy point, as the president might say, where there are more old people and not enough young people,
yeah,
to support that, that can be a real concern. And that is now affecting the Nordic countries. So they are considering various versions. People have suggested in various cities and in these Scandinavian countries to maybe pay women to have children.
Right.
That they'd give them $58,000 for every baby in Norway, because they want to encourage this kind of this demographic boom, because it's been dropping significantly. It used to be at 2.1, and now it's down to 1.49, and mm-hmm. that's a significant decline in Norway and Finland and Iceland. They've included, yes, too. So historic lows. One of the interesting developments in this, though, is you have immigration.
Mm-hmm.
Immigrants are coming in and helping the birth rate. And for some people, they say, hallelujah, they're going to save our welfare system. And the other half, I don't know what the percentage is, see it as a threat.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the parties in the far right have actually used this as a campaign to, they literally say, we need to stop Somalis. They're giving birth more often than, yeah, ethnic Norwegians. And we have to protect our way of life. So it cuts both ways. It's a positive and a negative in terms of immigration.
Well, don't forget, it was Norway, I think, that said, okay, if you come here from another country and you're Muslim, we will take your kid and give them 6 hours a day of training about the culture of our land and our people. You have to also learn the language. And I think they're knocking down all the ghettos and getting rid of those housings and housing projects. They want people to assimilate, and they're going to force them into assimilation.
Well, that's the part of it, because the concern is that they are losing their Norwegian way of life. However, right, if they see that Norwegian way of life is dependent on immigrants having babies to support their way of life, they may it might not be as negative as it might seem. Others, by the way, they say men don't seem to care enough in Copenhagen. They've started a campaign to let men know that sperm quality declines with age, so get on with it. You do have a biological clock, you men.